Shishuka uvacha. Nadesha param guru. Shapadeva prahita. Tyasandam manashvinam. Vamashaditam shishyam Nadeshakam guru Shapadeva Shri Shuga Uvacha Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, thus, Ashraditam, who is not very respectful to the instructions of his spiritual master. Shishyam, unto such a disciple. Nadesha Karam, who is not prepared to carry out the order of his spiritual master. Guru, the spiritual master, Shukracharya. Shashapa, cursed. Daiva Prahita, being inspired by the Supreme Lord. Satyasandham, one who is fixed in his truthfulness. Manashvinam, who is of a highly elevated character. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued, thereafter, the spiritual master, Shukracharya, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, cursed his exalted disciple, Bali Maharaj, who was so magnanimous and fixed in truthfulness, that instead of respecting his spiritual master's instructions, he wanted to disobey his order. Purport. The difference between the behavior of Bali Maharaj and that of his spiritual master, Shukracharya, was that Bali Maharaj had already developed love of Godhead, whereas Shukracharya, being merely a priest of routine rituals, had not. Thus, Shukracharya was never inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to develop in devotional service. As stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Devotees who actually engage in devotional service with faith and love are inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnavas are never concerned with ritualistic smartha brahmanas. Srila Sanatan Goswami has therefore compiled Hari Bhakti Vilas to guide the Vaishnavas who never follow the smartha vidhi. Although the Supreme Lord is situated in the core of everyone's heart, unless one is a Vaishnava, unless one is engaged in devotional service, one does not get sound advice by which to return home, back to Godhead. Such instructions are meant only for devotees. Therefore, in this verse, the word Daiva Prahita, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, is important. Shukracharya should have encouraged Bali Maharaj to give everything to Lord Vishnu. This would have been a sign of love for the Supreme Lord. But he did not do so. On the contrary, he wanted to punish his devoted disciple by cursing him. I'll read text 15 as well. We don't need to repeat it. Tridham pandita manyagya stabto syam smad upekshaya machchashanyatiko yastvam achirad brasyasheshiyaha. Translation. Although you have no knowledge, you have become a so-called learned person, and therefore you dare be so impudent as to disobey my order. Because of disobeying me, you shall very soon be bereft of all your opulence. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Bali Maharaj was not Panditamani, or one who falsely assumes himself learned. Rather, he was Pandita Manyagya, one who is so learned that all other learned persons worship him. And because he was so learned, he could disobey the order of his spiritual master. He had no fear of any condition of material existence. Anyone cared for by Lord Vishnu does not need to care about anyone else. Thus, Bali Maharaj could never be bereft of all opulences. The opulences offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not to be compared to the opulences obtained by Karmakanda. In other words, if a devotee becomes very opulent, it is to be understood that his opulence is a gift of the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such opulence will never be vanquished, whereas the opulence achieved by one's fruitive activities may be vanquished at any moment. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahita Gana Agunatan Vitamscha Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sadagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Kruna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Sujanu Sute Devi Ramani Vri Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for the opportunity to do this service, speaking something on these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Please give me your blessings so I can do the service well. I find this verse to be really powerful, a very powerful meditation, specifically on the contrast between love and fear. That's the main point that I was meditating on from this. In the first purport, Prabhupada makes the point of the distinction between Bali Maharaj and Shukracharya was that Bali Maharaj had developed love of God, whereas Shukracharya was simply a priest of routine rituals. He said, thus Shukracharya was never inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to develop in devotional service. So Bali Maharaj was absorbed in love of God. Therefore, this cursing that Shukracharya is giving to him, this curse is saying, you shall very soon be bereft of all your opulences. That's text 15, is the curse. But Bali Maharaj isn't affected by this curse at all, because he's already been saying in the previous verses that he's already ready to give up all of his opulences to the Supreme Lord. He said, specifically in one verse, he said, what is the use of all these opulences? They'll be separated when I die, so I might as well give them to this brahmachari. But even deeper than that, he knew he was Lord Vishnu, and so out of love, he's already ready to give his opulences. Therefore, this curse by Shukracharya, his material spiritual master, actually is having no effect on Bali Maharaj. And Prabhupada makes that point in the second purport, text 15. He said that he had no fear of any material condition, any condition of material existence. And he said, anyone cared for by Lord Vishnu does not need to care about anyone else. So that's the principle of watering the roots of the tree. The purport goes on to say that he will never be bereft of opulence, actually, from surrendering it to the Supreme Lord. He will always be in an opulent position by giving his opulence to the Supreme Lord. So, this is the difference between love and fear. And specifically in this example, we can meditate on real spiritual love compared to ritualistic religious performances that's being exhibited by Shukracharya. This real love destroys the fear. Just ritualistic engagement in spiritual activities doesn't necessarily destroy the fear, because we can see that Shukracharya, he's like a mystic yogi. Like, he has the ability to revive Bali Maharaj, bring him back from life, from death. But he's still not completely free of fear, and therefore he's advising Bali Maharaj in this way. I want to speak about this power of love of God, especially in terms of destroying fear. I have some notes. I looked at the definition of love. It's an intense feeling of deep affection. So for there to be affection, there has to be two people, two living entities at least, and then it's an exchange or a union. And then I was meditating on it. This feeling of love, it's like you feel connected. You feel like secure in your identity with someone, and you feel like you belong. So this feeling can only be actually realized, this real love, this feeling of belonging, this feeling of being connected, can only be realized with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with God, with Krishna, in its fullest, because that is the only real union, that's the only real actual security. Without Krishna in the center, this affection between living entities, doesn't create this fearlessness, this sense of security, because Krishna is not in the center, so it's not real love. It's only a temporary display of affection, which is usually self-centered, and it's usually actually lust in the material world, just like selfish exchanges of selfish desires. But this real love, when Krishna is in the center, that destroys all fear, because we're secure in our identity. All this fear that we experience in the material world is due to forgetfulness of our connection with Krishna, our connection with God. When we forget this, we're just absorbed in matter, and there's so much insecurity, there's danger at every step. But when we remember Krishna, we remember our relationship with God, we remember our eternal identity, then there's no fear. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the soul can never be touched by wind, fire, water, all these things. They can't touch the soul. We're actually untouchable by material elements. We can't be destroyed by anything, but we're in forgetfulness, and we're in the conditioned state. The soul is associated with matter. We identify with matter, and so we're experiencing this extreme fear, because our identity and our security is completely at risk at any moment. Everything that we're attached to, we know that it can be separated from us at any moment. So there's always, always, always in this world a deep anxiety that is always underneath the surface. It is always there, because there's no security in our, and because we're attached to the temporary. Especially in relationships between man and woman, this is the strongest hold in the material world, is the exchange between man and woman. You always experience that there's anxiety of, when will the relationship end? When will they find someone better than me? There's always this feeling of not being good enough, and eventually they will have to leave, because it's the truth, because we're not good enough to satisfy the other person, because only Krishna is good enough to satisfy the other person. So we try to be this role, we're trying to be something that we're not for the other person. They're also trying to be something that they're not for the other person. And we know that it will end. If not soon, and later on, and from death, everything, any affection in the material world will have to end, have to come to an end. So therefore, there's always deep anxiety. When will that affection run out? When will it end? But Krishna consciousness is the cultivation of real love. That's what we're doing. We're cultivating real, eternal love. Love that is union with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's very deep. I'm not qualified. I don't have experience love of God. But that's what we're doing. I'm just repeating what I've heard. And it's really amazing. It's super profound. Eternal love in exchange with the Supreme Person, with God. That's what this Krishna consciousness is. And I just, this is how we transfer from this temporary feelings of so much fear, based on these temporary relationships, temporary affairs of the material world. This Krishna consciousness takes us out of that and puts us into our eternal security, where there's no fear, nothing to fear at all, because we remember our identity with Krishna and with God, and we remember our service and this loving exchange. We belong, right? Somewhere we eternally have a position where we feel like we belong, we feel secure, we feel loved by the Supreme Person. So I have some thoughts about for sadhana bhakti, we have to cultivate this real love. We have to hold on to this real love of Krishna and let go of the attachment to the temporary sources of misery. It's explained that our faith in Krishna is like what we have to hold on to most dear. Our faith that this is what we really want. We really want Krishna. We really want to do this. We really want to continue. We want to grow. And that's called the Bhakti Lata Beach. That's really all that we have. It's the seed of devotion to Krishna. And we have to really hone in and focus and fence off anything around, fence off our Bhakti Lata Beach and focus only on the things that nourish our Bhakti Lata Beach, that nourish our devotion to Krishna. Anything that takes us away from thinking about Krishna or serving Krishna needs to be taken out, and we need to build up a fence around it and just focus on what is nourishing to this bhakti creeper that we have within us. We're all here, so we have the Bhakti Lata Beach. We have this love of Krishna that's growing. I'm just sharing this as a meditation that we can continue to fence off and focus on how to grow our love for Krishna. And the verses that come to mind to explain this fencing off and then nourishing are the first four verses of Nectar of Instruction. The first two are like building a fence, what we have to do. Vacho vegam manasakrodha vegam jiva vegam udarapasta vegam. So controlling the tongue, controlling the demands of the mind. The mind is so demanding. Our mind is always taking us away from Krishna. The mind is a complete rascal, especially when engaged with all of these material samskaras. It's just like agonizing. We have to control those, tolerate the demands of the mind. We can't control them necessarily. We have to tolerate them, tolerate these urges, tolerate the tongue, or tolerate the urge to speak nonsense, what we're used to speaking. And we have to tolerate, vachavegam, manasakrodavegam, the actions of anger. That's an interesting statement too, the actions of anger. We find that anger takes us over when we're exchanging with other devotees, and it becomes an action. And so we have to tolerate that. Even if it happens, we should try not to do it, but even if it happens, we have to tolerate it, let it pass. what is the next part? Jiva vegam, tolerate the urge of the tongue. We don't give in to satisfying our tongue with all that it wants. We can give it nice prasadam, but we don't overly let it control us. Udarapasta vegam, the tongue, belly, and genitals. So we don't eat too much, and we don't have uncontrolled sex life. So this verse is a nice verse of building a fence around our Bhakti Lata Beach. What we need to do to protect ourselves so we can stay focused on Krishna, stay in the right state of mind, right? We don't want to get absorbed in speaking nonsense, vacho vegam. We don't want to get absorbed in our mind's demands and the actions of anger, satisfying the tongue and belly and genitals all day. It's all so distracting. We can spend all day doing these things. But we want to focus in on Krishna, so we need to minimize these things and focus in and build our devotion to Krishna. Every day is a opportunity to build and get closer to Krishna and purify ourselves. So we grow our Bhakti Lata Beach. The second verse of Nectar of Instruction is six things that destroy, directly six things that destroy our bhakti. So this is also a nice meditation, how to protect our bhakti. Atyahara prayasascha. Atyahara means over collecting or overeating. which I already spoke about with the overeating, with over-collecting so many things, material things, that just distract us from developing devotion to Krishna. And prayasas cha, atyahar prayasas cha, over-endeavoring for mundane things so, that are very difficult to obtain. So doing so much material things that aren't related to Krishna destroys our bhakti. So we have to guard against that. Like our desires in the material world can sometimes overcome us. We may think even we're doing it for Krishna, like we want to start a band for Krishna, right? We want to do this for Krishna, but it could be our material desires and we're over-endeavoring for something where we simply actually just need to hear and chant and serve in a simple way. So instead of over-endeavoring so much, sometimes that can be a danger for our bhakti. What else is there in the verse? Prajalpo Niyamagraha, speaking mundane things, urge to speak, being too strict about the rules and regulations, or not being strict enough. Janasangas Chalolim Cha, so associating with materialistic people, and greed for material things. So these things we have to protect ourselves against, and we can develop our devotion by protecting us from that. And then the nourishing part, text 3 and 4 of Nectar of Instruction. what is it? That's 4, yeah. Dadati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichati bhunkte bhojayate chaiva bhaktir sadbir bhakti prasiddhiti. Loving exchanges among devotees, giving gifts, accepting gifts, this nourishes our devotional creeper. Revealing our mind and hearing from them confidential subject matters with devotees, and accepting prasadam, giving prasadam. And text 3, what is it again? Utsahan nischayadaya. Prasiddhiti. Yeah, so enthusiasm, patience, and confidence, those are three huge things for developing our devotion. We have to have enthusiasm. We have to engage ourselves with our energy, like in the kirtan, and in front of the deities. We have to put our energy into it. We have to put enthusiasm into it. Otherwise, it's just can become ritual, like Shukracharya's Smarta Brahmana thing, where we can just be running through the motions of the morning program, things like that. But enthusiasm brings life to the program, and that's where we get the benefit. That's where the bhakti and the love for Krishna grows. And then we have to be confident in the process so we don't lose faith. And then patience also, because we're sadhana bhaktas, so sometimes there's up and down. So we have to remain patient when there's during the downs and the ups, and keep going with the process. We have to engage in practical services, tat-tat, karma, pravartana, all sorts of activities we can engage in, keep ourselves busy, so we can stay out of the fearful propensity of material existence, just stay absorbed in Krishna consciousness, always just be so busy that we don't even get affected by material nature, just always absorbed in activities. Sangha tyaga, do you give up the association of materialistic people? And sato vrte, we follow in the footsteps of sadhus, the great souls. We have so many sadhus to look up to and to follow. The list goes on forever. all the advanced Srila Prabhupada disciples and Srila Prabhupada himself, all the acharyas, is an infinite amount of inspiration of sadhus to follow Satovrite. So these things nourish our bhakti, they bring us devotion, and the fence is what we need to avoid and what we need to do to stop our materialistic propensities, so we can develop this real love and security and union with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As I just have a note to saying that this is, it's very simple. It's so simple that just hearing and chanting about Krishna and avoiding the negatives of like our materialistic propensities, it's so simple to attain the highest perfection of love of God. But actually it's usually too simple for our complicated minds to accept. So we have to continue to practice. And one purport, Prabhupada says that you can become Krishna conscious at once. It's only a matter of accepting the fact. That's how simple it is. We just have to accept Krishna. Krishna is God. He looks like this. He's ecstatic. He's always in bliss, in love, in union with his devotees. It's very simple, and we just have to continue to chant his names and hear about him, and take nice prasadam and do the service. Whatever our authorities ask us to do, we comply, because that's an instruction of the scriptures too, to do all these practical activities under the guidance of devotees. It's very simple. The mind is complicated, and the mind, we're attached to a material, temporary, so it makes it complicated. But it's very simple. So I wanted to share some stories about this devotees who are totally absorbed in Krishna and thinking about Krishna, so they are fearless, just like Bali Maharaj, to kind of bring the point home. There's so many examples of devotees who are just absolutely fearless. The one story, the first story from the Vraja Leela from Krishna's pastimes, the cowherd boys. One day they're walking with the cows, bringing the cows to the pasturing grounds, and they're playing all sorts of games, doing goofy activities like jumping after frogs and imitating monkeys by going and sitting next to them, and just remaining silent and hanging out with the monkeys, or they're chasing the monkeys' tails. And there's sometimes it's explained that the boys, they shout down into a well and the echo comes back, and then they call the echo bad names. They make fun of the echo, so they're, "Hello, hello, hello, you're a rascal, you're a rascal, you're a rascal," something like that. They're going on with that, and they're having a blast. They're racing each other to Krishna, saying who can touch Krishna first. All these games are going on, and but then one of the associates of Kamsa, in the form of a huge snake serpent, is there in this particular pastime, and he's huge, and he's his mouth is open wide. He's coming to kill Krishna on behalf of Kamsa. But the boys, they see the snake. They know that the snake demon is there. They see it, and they can tell that it's a demon. But they still fearlessly say that nobody can kill us. And even if they can kill us, nobody can kill Krishna. So let us go into this snake's mouth. And so they happily are blowing their horns and dancing and singing, and they consciously walk into the mouth of the demon. And Krishna is like, it's explained that Krishna is looking on. He was like amazed by the external potency. He was like kind of astonished for a second. He's like, "What is this going on? There's a huge demon. My friends are all like consciously going into the mouth of the demon." And then Krishna has to figure out a way to take out the demon. So Krishna goes into the mouth of the demon, and then he expands himself. When he goes in, after Krishna goes in, the demon closes his mouth, and Krishna expands himself to block the life airs of the snake. demon, and then the life air is forced to go out the top of the skull of the demon because Krishna expanded. And then it said that the soul went out, and then a huge light came out, and then it merged back into the body of Krishna. And then Krishna revived all of his cowherd boys and brought him out of the mouth of the great snake demon, Agasur. So these devotees were totally faithful and absorbed in love of Krishna that they just walked right into a huge demon's mouth, and they were just laughing and playing the whole time. It reminds me of a song that I used to listen to when I was involved in the hippie movement a little bit. There's this band that had this song called "Be Fearless and Play." So they had to they put on this show to try to get people to be fearless and play for just like some time. But most of the time they were all just very intoxicated. So it was a nice concept, but really the real fearlessness in playing is in Vrindavan with Krishna. Where we can do that forever. We can always just play and be fearless. And then the fear of the material world is just forgotten. It's completely forgotten. Another story in Lord Chaitanya's Lila of being completely fearless and absorbed is when they're doing kirtans, they're walking from like village to village, these devotees, and they're so absorbed in kirtan that they completely forget where they're even going or why they're going. They're just absorbed in kirtan. So they say that they're going to one village and they say, "Which way to the Ganga?" And they're just doing kirtan. They say, "That way." Then they go that way. Then they get lost again. And they're just doing kirtan. And then they just say, "Which way to Vrindavan?" I don't know exactly how the story goes, where they're going, but the principle is that they were doing kirtan and they're just wandering from village to village, completely fearless of where they are, completely beyond the bodily concept. They're absorbed in love of God. Like, if we, like, try to, like, walk outside of Chicago, like, outside of a city and for some time, like, you get super scared, like, where am I supposed to go? Where am I supposed to sleep? What am I going to eat? But these devotees were just wandering here and there in complete absorption and love of Godhead from the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Like Sanatan Goswami, also an example of fearlessness. He had to walk to meet Lord Chaitanya through the forest, and he picked up so many diseases and things like that. Like he was completely fearless of whether he would die from these diseases or what was going to happen. By the time he got to, I believe it was Jagannath Puri, maybe it was Mayapur, but by the time he had all these welts and diseases, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him, and his body turned back into completely purified and perfect condition. So that's fearlessness. That fearlessness is there. Another example from that is Haridas Thakur, who was beaten and so many marketplaces because he wouldn't stop chanting the holy name. All he had to do to not be beaten was just to stop chanting. They said that, but he said, I'll never stop chanting. You can cut my body into so many pieces, and all those pieces will chant the holy names of Krishna. And so they beat him. They beat him in 22 marketplaces, and he never left his body. Said that usually people only last a few marketplaces, but they couldn't kill him. They couldn't kill him at all, and he was just absorbed in chanting, absorbed in love of God, this love that goes beyond all fear. He was completely absorbed, and then when they said that, you know, you have to die, otherwise we will die, he says, "Oh, I have to die? If my being alive makes you have to die, then I'll die." And so he consciously gave up. He went into a trance and left his body, no life symptoms, but he was still there. And they threw him in the river, and they thought he was gone. But then he came back, and he went right back to the king, the king who punished him. And he said, "You cannot kill me." He did all this to prove the power of this love of Krishna, power of the holy name. He went right back. Normally a person, if they were punished like that, they would run away, you know, forever. like never go back to the people who beat them in so many marketplaces and literally trying to kill him. But he went right back to prove that that's real extreme fearlessness because of the love of God that he's experiencing. Another example, it's Prabhupada, complete fearlessness from being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He came to America without knowing anything about America, a foreign country. This is a classic story. We all hear it all the time. But it never gets old because he's our savior. Without him, we would all just be totally absorbed in the fearful condition of material existence. Even the heart attacks and crossing the ocean, all that, even after that, he went to Pennsylvania, but after Pennsylvania, he went deep into the city of New York on his own. And especially after he left the yoga studio of Dr. Mishra, the impersonalist, he was completely on his own, and he was completely reliant on the young hippies of New York. He got no support from the Gaudiya Math or anyone from India. He was writing to them, but nobody could help him. So he completely turned his focus to translating Srimad Bhagavatam and cultivating the hippies of New York City and cultivating them. And he was in this area called the Bowery, which was a completely downtrodden area. It was a ghetto for like hundred years or so. Like one of the worst areas, and Prabhupada was living in like a artist loft with like hippies would come in at any time of the day. He would let them come in and stay with him, and there's like basically everyone was just completely whacked out on drugs, and there was Prabhupada sitting there translating, giving lectures a few times a week, and just like completely in the midst of the worst area in America, like. That's one of the reasons a lot of people glorified him, because a lot of the like Indian sadhus that came there, they went right for the rich class. But Prabhupada, he was so merciful that he went right to the worst area and lived amongst the worst, lowest people in New York City. And it happened to be the people who were most favorable for really actually dedicating to spiritual life. And then he exhibited so much fearlessness throughout the rest of his pastime in the mission, establishing Krishna consciousness all over the world. I think that for the rest of the stories. So just to connect that with what I was speaking about before in the verse is this being absorbed in this love and this real position with Krishna, and we're really unified, we're really connected with Krishna. There's nothing to fear because we're eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, and we belong with Krishna. We're accepted and we feel secure. Whereas in the material world, everything is temporary, so there's no security and it's full of anxiety. Like Bali Maharaj is completely fearless. Anything he said, I'll give to Vamanadeva, to the Lord. And Shukracharya, although he's one of the most powerful people in the material platform, he's afraid because he's going to lose his wealth, because Bali Maharaj is the source of his wealth. So he's cursing him. And so that's the main lesson that I got from this verse. It's also the appearance day or disappearance day? Appearance day of Narottam Das Thakur. I don't know much of the glories of Narottam Das Thakur, but he's probably pretty fearless as well. I'm just going to read a little bit for the sake of honoring him, because I can't speak anything from within, but I read a little bit, if that's okay. Appearing as the son of a king, Sri Narottam Das Thakur showed all the bodily symptoms of a Mahapurush, an exalted divine person. He had long arms, a deep navel, Golden complexion, beautiful eyes, shaped like the lotus petals. In school, he was a Shruti Dhara, able to memorize whatever he hears. Although he quickly mastered Sanskrit and the Vedas, he hankered to serve Krishna. He was a lifelong brahmachari. By the mercy of the holy name and Gaura Nitai, Narottam became detached, left his opulent family, and ran to Vrindavan. That's a symptom of fearlessness and absorption of love. Ran to Vrindavan. He took Diksha from Sri Lokanath Goswami and Shiksha and Gaudiya philosophy from Sri Jiva Goswami. When he arrived in Navadvip Dham, all the devotees asked him about the health and activities of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. They were eager to hear the news from Vrindavan. After visiting all of Gauranga's pastimes places in Gaura Mandala, Narottam Das did the same in Sri Kshetra Dham, Jagannath Puri. Then he went to see the devotees and Sri Chaitanya's pastime spots in Shantipur, Sri Kanda, Kantak, Nagar, Ekachakra, and Keturi Gram. In Keturi, Sri Narottam Das Thakur arranged the famous Keturi Mahotsava. This was the first Gaura Purnima festival to honor the divine appearance day of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. During the festival, six deities were installed: Sri Gaurangadev, Sri Vallabhi Kanta, Sri Vrajamohan, Sri Krishna, Sri Radha Kanta, Sri Radha Ramana. With his sweet voice, Narottam Das began a wonderful kirtan. His chanting filled the heavens and brought down tears of prema from the eyes of the devotees, who were all sporting in the ocean of ecstasy. In the midst of their kirtan, the munificent Sri Chaitanya himself and all his personal associates appeared and joined in the Sankirtan. Like a flash of lightning in the midst of a mass of beautiful blue clouds, Sri Chaitanya himself appeared in the crowd of devotees through a divine manifestation. At that time, although Mahaprabhu had left this world years before, many different devotees saw Mahaprabhu in different ways. Those of Sri Navadvip Dham saw him more intimately as Nimai Chandra or Vishvambar, as they knew him during his youth. Those devotees were attracted to Mahaprabhu in Sakya and Vatsalya Ras. The followers of the six Goswamis, who only knew Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi, related to him in the mood of Dasya Ras, and hundreds of devotees also worshipped Lord Chaitanya in an Aishwarya mood of awe and reverence. This festival is considered a major achievement in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Hundreds and hundreds of devotees were invited, including direct disciples of Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Acharya. At this time, many differences existed in the interpretation of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Acharya Rani Janava Devi came from Kardaha with her entourage. I believe she's the wife of Lord Nityananda. Presiding over all the Vaishnavas, she resolved their diverse conclusions into one consistent Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. For the first time, the festival featured many kirtan styles, which integrated the glorification of Lord Chaitanya and the glorification of Lord Krishna and his pastimes. And because so many Vaishnavas were present at one place, it automatically made the Keturi festival extraordinary. It also acted as an important step towards unifying all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Narottam Das Thakur wrote many devotional songs about the spiritual master, the devotees, devotional service, the six Goswamis, Gaura Nityananda, and Radha and Krishna. Although composed with sweet melodies in simple Bengali language, Narottam Das's songs give Shastric Siddhanta and devotional inspiration. Srila Prabhupada often sang these bhajans, considering them non-different from Vedic Shastra. He quoted them in his Bhagavatam lectures. Pratana and Prema Bhakti Chandrika are Narottam's most famous work. The following excerpt comes from Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Radha and Krishna are my goal in life and death, and they are the masters of my breath. Performing my bhajan, only for them I rise and fall in the ocean of prema. I pray that I can always maintain this conception within my heart as my highest ideal. Let me serve the lotus feet of Radha Govinda. Let my mind be filled with dedication to their divine forms that defeat the beauty of Cupid and Rati. With a straw between my teeth, I fall at their divine feet and present my humble appeal. O Kishore Kishori, O son of Nanda Maharaj Shyamasundar, and O daughter of King Vrishabhanu, Sri Radha, You enchant even Hari, and your bodily complexion is the color of a golden lotus. O Krishna, with a bodily color like an Indranila gem, blue jewel, your beauty mocks Cupid. O topmost dancer, Sri Radha and Sri Krishna, please dance within my mind. O you whose beauty increases the charm of your dazzling ornaments, day and night, I only wish that I shall go on singing your glories in great ecstasy. Sri Narottam Das serves Srimati Radharani as Chamaka Manjari. His samadhi is in Radha Gokulananda's temple courtyard. That's all. So, if anyone wants to ask any questions.
Hare Krishna. My question is about something you said about the identities that we have. And as you were speaking, I was thinking that sometimes, even when we come to devotional service, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we may still carry some of that fear of our material, you know, this material identity. We may still carry the fear into devotional service, and then even amongst devotees, we may have fear that some part of our identity may be taken away or something like that, so we hold on very tightly and tend to, you know, rub shoulders against each other, and these things kind of grind. So I'm wondering if you could comment about what it would take to become fearless, even when we had this fear. I mean, you spoke about it a little bit, but how to get away from this fear, even when we're in the devotional service, if it carries over.
That's a good question. I was thinking of sharing some other stories of some modern devotees becoming fearless, and some examples that come to my mind is devotees who become really fearless are the ones who take risks for preaching the mission of Krishna consciousness, like Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He was distributing books in Russia during the Cold War. He was African American. At one point, he was distributing books on a university, and a KGB member literally started running after him to try to catch him. And they, at this time, they were torturing devotees and even killing devotees. And so he was running after him, and Bhakti Tirtha Swami ran inside a building, was running from the KGB, and he like turned a corner quick and swooped into an office. And like right when he turned the corner, he swooped into the office, and then the KGB ran right by. And then in the office, there was a professor, and he was like, "What are you doing in here?" And then he just like totally played it cool. He said, "I'm here to distribute books." So he distributed a book to the professor right there. When the KGB guy was running right by, he was in the office distributing a book to a professor, and he took the book and gave donation. So we can learn from that to be dedicated to the mission and be absorbed in the mission. And we can develop that deep faith and fearlessness. Do that. Palm Kroon is also a good example of this. Anything else? No? All right. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrī Narottam Das Thakur ki jai, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai, Tai Gaura Prema Nandaya.